Hey guys, my name's Brandon. I'm here with Megan and Madison. We are at Stone Valley Recovery. They have been gracious enough to allow us to use their facilities, and we're doing this week's weekly reflections. I had dropped out. We might next ask ourselves what we mean when we say that we have harmed other people. What kinds of harm do people do one another anyway? To define the word harm in a practical way, we might call it the result of instincts in collision which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. That's from 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 80. I had been to 8-step meetings, always thinking, I really hadn't harmed many people, mostly myself. But the time came when I wrote my list out, and it was not as short as I thought it would be. I either liked you, disliked you, or needed something from you. It was that simple. People hadn't done what I wanted them to do, and intimate relationships were out of hands because of my partner's unreasonable demands. Were these, quote, sins of omission? Because of my drinking, I had dropped out, never sending cards, returning calls, being there for people, or taking part in their lives. What a grace it had been to look at these relationships, to make my inventories in quiet, alone with God of my, alone with the God of my understanding, and to go forth daily with a willingness to be honest and forthright in my relationships. Yikes.
This has been a prevalent theme for us, it seems.
This month.
I liked how they mentioned in that reading, and they said that they had dropped out, basically dropped out of life while drinking. And those couple of sentences that entailed not returning phone calls, not showing up, not checking the mail, not returning phone calls, not being where I should be. God, I was notorious for that, and it was never what I intended. I never intended harm, but I couldn't face the truth. I couldn't pick up the phone and admit I have a drinking problem while I still had a drinking problem. I couldn't do it. I didn't have that power within me, and I couldn't, I just look at it like I couldn't face the truth. And so I hid out. I hid from everything and everyone. And the one last thing I couldn't hide from, for me, was me. That kind of just hit me because I thought back of how sad it really was when I had my phone right here and it's my mom or it's my boss or it's my, you know, it's my family. It's somebody who cares about me right there that close. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it at that moment. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't have the words, and I didn't have the courage back then. There was not enough liquid courage in the world to admit that I had a problem that severe. I didn't have the words for that. And so I did. I can totally relate to the idea of dropping out because I feel like I dropped out of my own life. I didn't experience being a dropout in high school. I was asked to leave college pretty quickly, but that wasn't by choice at all. So I do relate to it being a life dropout. I feel like I have dropped out from every important commitment, relationship, job. It's like I just checked out and I was stuck with just me. And there's nothing more miserable than being stuck with yourself when you are so sad and alone. And they touched on towards the end there, you know, the idea of after you've experienced moments like that and you come to this program and you start to make amends and you start to reach out and you suddenly start to show up where you couldn't before. And I've experienced that firsthand. I find myself answering the phone every time without even thinking about it anymore. Because I want those very same people to know that I'm here today and I'm present today and I'm alive today and I don't want to put worry out there and I don't want to harm people anymore. And I think before the overriding fear, that took over my desire to not want to harm them. Yeah. My fear took over. Yeah. And today I don't live with that. And that's because of the amends and because of the program, you know?
No, I can't say that I don't, because now when people call me, I'm like, it depends on who it is, but I'm like, do I really want to answer that? Shit. And then I pick up the phone. So I do this whole cuss and like debate in my mind before I answer the phone, but I answer the phone. I definitely checked out. You know, I was so high that I would have a firm resolution to do certain things, like show up when a family member had surgery, my mother specifically, you know, and 2 weeks would go by, and I'm like, oh my God, I missed her surgery. I wonder if she's okay. Are you kidding me? And I don't mean to laugh, oh my God, you know, and that would just reinforce the obsessive mind and my need to use, because I felt like I was morally bankrupt and that I was a terrible person, you know? And so when I wrote down my four-step inventory, so I think it was the fourth column that what was my part, and I would see patterns. I would see patterns of like using them to validate you or to provide security for emotional or financial reasons or whatever the reason was, I used people. And I didn't ever realize before I wrote it all down and I looked over it, I'm like, oh my God, I used all these people to benefit myself, not thinking about how it was gonna affect them. Like that was out of my mind, right? Because I presented myself well, so I thought. But it was all a lie. And of course that hurts other people. Whether I think I can cover it up enough to not hurt them, it hurts them, regardless of what my delusional mind thinks. Mm-hmm. And so I guess through the reading and what you're talking about, living amends is a huge thing for me. And that got brought back up. Every day I try to not be that same person, right? But if I don't progress and remain spiritually fit, those old behaviors start to crop up and I don't even realize it. And then I'm backtracking or I'm going against the way that I want to live life, right? I want to show up for people. I want to care what they think or how they're feeling, you know, within reason. Never mind the codependent portion of that, but but to have consideration and compassion for other people. You know, not just be out for self and take down anyone that gets in the way, including family members, loved ones, didn't really matter, you know?
And in the end, all you're really taking down is yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're harming those people, but I think that, you know, you're doing just as much, if not more harm to yourself. You know, you spoke, Megan, you spoke on when we were doing these things, it wasn't our intention to harm. And that's true. Like, I don't think any of us are, at our core, bad people.
No.
As alcoholics or addicts, we don't have that intention. Now, the book tells us, while we were drinking, we judged ourselves by our intentions while the world was judging us by our actions. And when someone first presented that to me, I was having the conversation with them, like, because I'd harmed them. And this was well before I ever even got to my amends. I said, well, I didn't mean to, you know, that wasn't my intention to do any harm. And they presented that to me. They said, well, your actions said differently. The book also tells us that we found that defective relationships were almost always the immediate cause of our woes. Like, I have defective relationships with people, but first and foremost, I have a defective relationship with myself. I have a defective relationship with my higher power. Which bleeds off into every single facet of my life, because I was taught, and I found it to be my truth, and I like to stand in my truth today, that my relationship with other people is a direct reflection of my relationship with my higher power, who I choose to call God. If I'm harming people, I'm probably not paying a whole lot of attention to my spiritual fitness. But through the amends process, through working the steps and trying to trying to make right those things and making a lot of them right. I found this new freedom. I don't have to live with shame, guilt, and remorse and just repeating that vicious cycle. I don't have to do that anymore. But, you know, you spoke on if you're not keeping in spiritual fitness, you will slip back into those old behaviors. I was having a conversation last night with someone about behaviors, and you know, I don't think and I could be totally wrong, and I'm not going to say this as a matter of fact, but I don't think that me acting out in certain behaviors, they're not going to make me relapse. No. My ego at this point in time will not allow me to relapse, but I'll be miserable. If I continue to act out in certain behaviors and not make things right, I'll be miserable. I may want to kill myself. I won't relapse because my ego just won't let me do that. But I'll be absolutely miserable. And what is worse than a miserable dry alcoholic? Nothing.
Oh my gosh.
I would much prefer to encounter someone who is drunk. Mm-hmm. Inactive addiction than a dry mm-hmm. alcoholic who's not working a program. Mm-hmm. I would much prefer to encounter those people and deal with them. So today for me, what I have to do is completely work this program as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, do the amends the way that they've been told me to, and every other thing that goes along with maintaining my spiritual fitness. Right. I want to thank Madison and Megan for being with us. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you've heard something that you like today or that has struck a chord with you, feel free to go to detox2rehab.com. There's an array of resources there. There's also an addiction hotline. We have specialists that are waiting right now to answer the phone. And you can always join us next week for more fun stuff.